One of my favorite projects that we have is in the maternal and infant care space that helps clinicians to monitor mothers and babies in near real time by integrating fetal strips, vitals, EMR data, and hospital protocol-defined decision support into a single view. And we are also looking at generative and multimodal AI, where we can unlock insights from the 97% of healthcare data that currently goes unused. That statistic just blows my mind. We have so much data there that's yet untapped, and AI has the power to do that.
Hello and welcome to season 4 of Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. My name is Christian Terwisch. I'm a professor of operations, information and decisions at the Wharton School, as well as the co-director of the Mac Institute for Innovation Management. It's my pleasure to be your host this season as we tackle the big questions shaping AI's role in the world of business today and into the future. It's our goal to cut through the noise to deliver actionable insights for business leaders by combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast, so let's dive in. In this first episode of this season, our focus is on AI applications in healthcare. For the last years, I've had the privilege of teaching healthcare operations here at the Penn Spellman School of Medicine. Talking with clinicians and healthcare executives, my sense is really the biggest challenge facing the industry is one of productivity. Our healthcare workforce is overworked, almost to or even beyond the point of burnout. At the same time, many patients have a hard time getting timely appointments. And to complete this difficult triangle, healthcare costs in most modern economies have been growing much faster than GDP. Now, as we are facing this productivity challenge, it is tempting to turn to technology as a solution. But despite some remarkable success of AI in some specific specialties, such as radiology, there's no evidence that Dr. ChatGPT or any other version of AI will soon solve this productivity challenge. To learn more about this fascinating topic, it gives me great pleasure to welcome today's guest to the podcast, Lara Liss. Lara is the Chief Privacy and Data Trust Officer at GE Healthcare. Thanks for being on the podcast, Lara.
Thanks for having me.
Lara, before we get into the AI discussion, please tell us about the journey you took to get to where you are. Unlike maybe becoming a doctor, Chief Privacy Officer is not the typical dream of a young child or student when they begin their career.
So I am an attorney by background, and after law school, I spent some time working for a large healthcare group at a big law firm in Chicago, based out of Chicago. And then from there, I went in-house, leading a global privacy program at a Fortune 50 company just 5 years out of law school. And I think they say timing is everything in your career. Having a little bit of background and exposure to healthcare and to privacy at a time when this field was exploding was a big opportunity for me in my career. And I love the combination of public policy and healthcare, as well as the privacy realm and the questions that it presented and how we use data responsibly and ethically to improve outcomes for patients. So I've stayed my entire career in the healthcare sector in privacy. I spent some time at a hospital health system as their privacy officer, and then also worked at Walgreens Boots Alliance, leading their privacy program and also co-founding their responsible AI program about 5 years ago.
Lara, most of us as consumers, as patients of healthcare, we're likely to have interacted with the imaging technology, right? I'm thinking about X-ray machines, scanners, ultrasounds. Can you give us a brief overview of your business and how it touches millions of patients every day?
GE Healthcare is a leading global healthcare solutions provider. We aim to make hospitals more efficient and clinicians more effective, therapies more precise, and patients happier and healthier. As you mentioned at the beginning and in your introduction, I think there's such opportunity in the healthcare space right now. And we're helping health systems to tackle these challenges by doing a number of things. First, we're developing smart devices that enable better, faster decisions and treatment. We are also innovating across the healthcare journey, aligning to disease states specifically. And we're using software solutions that can help tailor each patient's journey across a care pathway from diagnosis to treatment and monitoring. And then finally, we also solve challenges at the hospital system or enterprise level by building software services powered by AI and predictive analytics that can help hospitals deliver high quality care more efficiently at scale. We are also developing new capabilities for the future, developing cloud-based and AI-powered innovations that help providers and clinicians to turn data into actionable insights, help clinicians deliver more precise diagnoses and treatment plans faster than before, and help hospitals boost their efficiency.
Cool. Well, I recently read, I think it was on your website, that you have 1.5 million devices in the field, and you're estimating that you're touching 1 billion patients every year. That's quite a scale.
It is, and I think that's what's so exciting about the potential in this area to really use healthcare, and particularly AI, to change the way that care is delivered and to have that impact. You know, when I look at what motivates me to get up in the morning, it's the potential to change people's lives for the better. So
absolutely,
a company like GE Healthcare is well positioned to do that and is part of that healthcare ecosystem that is looking to really just drive those outcomes for patients every day.
Interesting. I mean, it strikes me radiology has probably been the medical discipline that has benefited so far the most from AI. So how much AI is involved when a typical patient in the United States now is going to radiology, say for mammography, say for a meniscus tear? How much AI is involved and where is the AI used?
So we do have computer vision technology of AI incorporated into many of our imaging devices. We do think that AI-enabled solutions have the potential to address the toughest challenges our customers are facing. As you mentioned at the beginning in your opening remarks, those care team shortages and burnout, rising costs and inefficient workflows. So as you indicated, we do think, particularly in the imaging space, the applications, we're seeing the benefits of those things today. And our goal is to transform these challenges into opportunities for faster, more accessible, and more personalized care. And I'll give you a couple of examples of what that looks like. So that is using AI not just as an add-on, but as an enabler of systemic change. One of my favorite projects that we have is in the maternal and infant care space, and it's our Care Intellect for Perinatal, formerly called Murrell Perinatal Surveillance, that helps clinicians to monitor mothers and babies in near real time by integrating fetal strips, vitals, EMR data, and hospital protocol-defined decision support into a single view. And we are also looking at generative and multimodal AI, where we can unlock insights from the 97% of healthcare data that currently goes unused. That statistic just blows my mind. We have so much data there that's yet untapped, and AI has the power to do that. With agentic AI, we can see the potential to create proactive systems that collaborate like virtual care teams, anticipating patient needs instead of simply reacting to them. And with responsible AI principles guiding us around safety, fairness, and explainability, we are designing these solutions to be trustworthy and clinically meaningful as well.
Given the scale and given the sensitive nature of medical data, what makes responsible AI special in healthcare?
Well, at its core, responsible AI is about trust and trusting that an organization has the right safeguards in place to deliver AI that is reliable, safe, and meets legal and regulatory requirements for how it will operate. Part of my work with GE Healthcare is to co-lead our responsible AI program together with our chief AI officer, Perry Bhatia. When companies ask how to start this work, the first step is to get together a cross-functional team of your subject matter experts at the organization who each bring an important perspective to the table on responsible AI. This needs to be a big tent representing different corners of the company, including data scientists, product teams, IT, cybersecurity, legal, privacy, regulatory, your quality folks, risk management, compliance, your human resources team, your finance team, government relations, and even communications. You may also need external experts to fill knowledge or expertise gaps. And in our case, this is where we hired a team from Accenture to help us with this work. And once you have that team together, the next step is to get the company's principles of how it will approach AI in place. And there are some common themes and principles that we see as you look at the companies who have gone ahead in this work. And they include concepts from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, from the National Institute for Standards and Technology, or NIST, from the EU AI Act, and others. Many of these principles have their roots in good data practices, such as cybersecurity, fairness, transparency, and privacy. They also incorporate concepts like safety. And as a medical device company, safety is our North Star. So this concept of safety as a responsible AI principle resonated with our team members. And after you have your principle set, the next step is to build out the program, including policies, tools, frameworks, and trainings. Many companies are looking to the ISO standard on AI management systems, known as 42001, as a framework for their program.
One of the things I find interesting as a researcher doing medical research is we have the tendency, I mean, you mentioned this abundance of data, in your case, a billion patients. We have the tendency to just collect data and have the data just in case. We'll see what we do with it later. It strikes me that you as a chief privacy officer are a little skeptical when researchers and analysts collect data just in case without having a clear game plan on how to use it later.
Exactly as you said, from a privacy standpoint, we need to have the legal basis to process the data for what we are using it for. And that means that in the context of AI, we need to have the legal basis to process the data to train AI. This is an important concept in healthcare, and it relates to medical privacy and the underpinnings that we have in the confidentiality relationship between the doctor and patient. So the good news is that in the healthcare space, we already have in place compliance programs and privacy protections for data that make the move into AI fairly seamless. We have put in place, as one of our pillars of our responsible AI program, a privacy framework. And that helps us to ensure that we have the right controls around that data, which enables that concept of trust that we talked about earlier.
Is there a tension between the ownership of the data and who is allowed to train AI system between you as the equipment maker, the radiologist, the provider who ordered the image, and ultimately the patient? Or is it pretty clear from a legal perspective who owns the data?
From a legal perspective, it's important that we have the legal basis to process the data. So as a company, that's why we're careful to ensure that we have data licensing agreements or an other appropriate basis to use data to process AI. That underpins the piece of trust that we talked about earlier as well, that's so foundational to a responsible AI program. From a legal landscape, it depends on the jurisdiction, but typically the records belong to the clinician who generates the records, and then the patients legally have a right to access that data that's created about them. So those legal bases and that legal framework, it underpins all of the pieces that companies are building into their responsible AI programs in the healthcare space, making sure we're using that data responsibly in compliance with laws when we're using it to train AI.
You mentioned safety as a North Star, which all of us patients are certainly happy to hear. In the context of generative AI, we're all familiar with hallucinations, right? This observation that because of the stochastic nature of the AI training, there are some unexpected and undesirable behaviors of these models. We've seen this with both text and images. So how do you avoid this? And who is ultimately responsible when something goes wrong?
So as we developed our responsible AI program, one of the pieces that we made sure to do as a medical device manufacturer was to build responsible AI practices and principles in from the beginning of the product development lifecycle at what we call the M0 phase. And as we did that planning, part of our pillars for responsible AI include validity, and that validity pillar is looking at concepts of model drift and hallucinations, ensuring that we have our best data scientists at the table as we are developing those tools and products so that we look at, assess, and address the risk associated with some of those challenges that are there in the AI space, and making sure that ultimately products that we bring to market have the approvals of our regulators and are safe, and we are proud to stand behind them as we bring them to the market.
How much do you get involved or are you aware of with how the product is then used by the radiologists and the technicians who get involved? Because they hopefully have some human-in-the-loop system that is not entirely automating the image reading, but making sure that it is a healthy interplay so that the human, the radiologist, gets augmented, as you explained earlier, as opposed to having a coffee and a break while everything happens automatically.
So having a human in the loop is one of the required elements under the EU AI Act, and it is something that we have built into our responsible AI program. There is not a place where AI replaces humans or replaces clinicians. It is a tool that our healthcare providers will use as they practice medicine. And as a lawyer, I can tell you that the only individuals who are authorized to practice medicine are people. Machines are not authorized to practice medicine. And so these are supplements that we seek to provide in the market for healthcare providers to do, but they are not replacements.
Interesting. we still have to design workflows with the provider in the loop. They might get some of their report writing now automated. They might be alerted to some features of the image. But again, as you said so nicely, we're not replacing them. I had another question which I found very intriguing as a scholar of innovation. So at the Mac Institute, where I co-direct a center of innovation management, we talk about quick failure and experimentation and build it and break it. How do these principles and really the fun of innovation play out in the world of a data privacy officer? I mean, I hope you forgive me, but in some sense, this sounds complex and bureaucratic. Are you the place where innovation and fun is going to die?
So I take a strong stance that that is not who we are. I actually say that as a chief privacy and data trust officer, we are the navigators, we are the translators, and we are the diplomats when it comes to this work. And in that sense, I mean, we are the navigators. So we have to take incredibly complex legal requirements from jurisdictions across the world and overlay them together with our product development teams with what we want to do in the product development space. And then we have to chart a course that works globally for the company to meet those legal requirements and to help our teams to bring these products to life in compliance with responsible AI laws and privacy regulations. And I actually find that incredibly challenging and fun to do. And I enjoy learning about our technology every day and how we benefit patients. The second piece of what we do is we act as the translators. And by that, I mean we have to understand the technical descriptions that our data scientists are giving to us about how these AI models work, that our product teams give to us about how our technology and our products work. And we are able to translate those into policies and procedures and frameworks that guide our development of AI that is rooted in good data practices such as cybersecurity and fairness and transparency and privacy. And we are able to explain the technology to regulators, to customers, to patients in this space in a way that they can understand. And then finally, I say we are the diplomats in this work because you have to bring together people from across the company as you are building a responsible AI program from over a dozen teams. And you have to get them to align to how you will build this program and bring these concepts to life as you are manufacturing and bringing products to market. And all of that, I find, requires a level of you have to build consensus across the groups. You have to be able to listen to different concerns and hash out how you're going to solve and respond to problems as you build the program. And I find all of that very enjoyable to do. I strongly recommend this field to anyone who is maybe earlier in their career or midway through their career, and they're looking at how do they get involved in AI work. I say to them, you do not need to have a PhD in computer science to do responsible AI. It helps to have certain skill sets, such as legal or compliance, risk management, product development background, cybersecurity. All of these together are necessary components that we bring to the table. Certainly, incredibly important to this work are the data scientists and their background and expertise. But I love being that diplomat who gets to help bring all of those people together and follow that course we have charted as the navigators to be able to bring this program to life and have the satisfaction of knowing we're making patients' lives better every day.
What things are you excited about coming next? I mean, GE Healthcare has really been on the forefront of using deep learning for the last decade when it comes to image reconstruction, right? So it's not just that you are making things faster, you're also providing better images, which for the clinicians mean better outcomes. What are you working on right now that you're excited to see happening next?
As we look to the future, some of the things that excite me the most is we are developing pioneering research, including industry-first research foundation models such as SonoSAM Track for ultrasound, full-body 3D MRI, and full-body X-ray. Additionally, based on what we've seen published, GE Healthcare is the first to explore the application of multi-agentic AI to the challenges facing the healthcare industry with Project Health Companion.
So Lara, we started off with your personal career. Let me ask you this. You have been in this role for some time now. What advice would you give your younger self if you were starting all over again, or to other executives who just got promoted to this role? What have you learned that you feel others could benefit from?
If I were giving advice to my younger self or to someone else coming up in this space, it would be to stay curious and to be a voracious reader and learner about new technologies that are emerging. There's so many good sources for information now. Some of my favorites are podcasts like this, but also some great books, and then talking with some of the leading data scientists in this area and people in this responsible AI space as well. Every day I learn in my job, and I think being that open, curious learner is some of the best advice I could give. For executives who may be listening to this, I would say if you have a company that has AI in the marketplace, you need to be thinking about how are you providing appropriate oversight for AI governance? What are the risk controls that your organization has in place? And do you have the appropriate mechanisms to ensure that what you're delivering to the market is safe and effective and reliable?
This has been a fascinating discussion. What a great way to kick off our new season. Lara, thank you for joining me today here on our podcast, Where AI Works.
Thanks, Christian. You made it very enjoyable.
Wrapping up today's episode, let's reflect a moment on what we should take away from the discussion with Lara. There are a couple of things that stood out to me. The first one is really the human in the loop. The productivity boost we are aiming here, it's not the 10x that we have been seeing when we apply ChatGPT to homework problems in high school. We are doing an AI assist, an augmentation of the clinician. So we are aiming for a much smaller productivity improvement. Again, not the 10x that is tempting to dream of. Second, as a school of innovation, I like to think of an innovation as a novel match between a solution and a need. In this context, I feel it's important to realize that the solution is not just an AI system. The solution is really an interaction of the workflow and the technology. This is much more than an engineering problem. And I think Lara was very passionate to underline the importance of compliance, the importance of product development, of the legal aspects. And again, it's much more than an engineering problem. The workflow, the liability, the privacy, they all come together. And the final challenge is really one, what to do with the data, right? This is an interesting tension here between the equipment maker, the clinician, the radiologist, and ultimately, let's not forget the patient. Who owns the data? That brings us to the end of the season premiere. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to tune in next time when I'll be speaking with Alfredo Collas, the Chief Data Officer at Procter & Gamble. You've been listening to our podcast, Where AI Works, Conversations at the Intersection of AI and Industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Christian Terbisch, and on behalf of all of us here at the Wharton School, thank you for listening.